This podcast is being recorded on the lands of the Wurundjeri people of the Kulin Nation and the Gadigal people of the Eora Nation. We'd like to acknowledge their connection to land, water and culture, and their elders past, present and emerging. We'd also like to acknowledge that colonisation and genocide are ongoing processes that continue to this day, and that this always was and always will be Aboriginal land.
Hey, what's up? Welcome to Auspol Snack Pod, the podcast where we serve you up bite-sized chunks of Australian politics and news with a side of crispy memes. We're also the official podcast of the Auspol Shitposting Facebook group. So if you hear us talking about memes and you're like, hey, I wish I could see these memes, then you should come and join the Facebook group. It's fun. My name is Zach Lesnack. I am a mod on the Auspol Shitposting Facebook group.
And I am Noon, also known as I Know Funkenstein. I'm the admin and creator of Auspol Shitposting.
Thanks for joining me again, Noon. Always a pleasure.
It is.
Love hanging out. Love hearing your chocolatey tones.
Why, thank you very much.
We should just point out that we're recording earlier in the week than we normally do because I'm not around this weekend. So some of the stories we talk about may have developed and, you know, big shit may go down from Thursday onwards that we may not mention.
It's already been a big week this week, so I wouldn't be surprised if there is some big shit coming on the next few days. So apologies if we missed that. But we're recording early as well because we have a very exciting interview with someone which we're going to be playing the second half of this episode.
Yeah, so stick around for that. But first up, let's get into this entree, Noon. What did you bring for us to snack on?
So we're going to talk about John Setka, who is the head of the Victorian branch of the CFMEU.
And
he's been in the news quite a bit recently because he was in court for domestic violence-related stuff, which he pled guilty to, and now basically nearly everybody wants him to resign, and he is refusing to. And as a result of that, there's a bunch of other bad shit happening. Like, there's this anti-union bill going through Parliament. And Jackie Lambie has basically said that she'll vote for it unless John Setka resigns, which, by the way, I think is a terrible reason to vote for that bill, because the Parliament has no power over John Setka. He's already been expelled from the Labour Party, and him being a shit brick is no reason to throw the whole union movement under the bus. So
what are you talking about, Noon? Stand strong, union, shoulder to shoulder, solidarity forever.
Yeah, not with misogynists
that we all get punished. That's how it works.
Harass their wife and threaten to hurt her and send her threatening text messages.
He's a real bad guy.
Yeah.
He's an absolute piece of shit.
There should be no room for misogyny and anti-woman violence in the union movement, and he should get the fuck out.
Absolutely.
But what's happened this week is that he has threatened the Centre Alliance and Jackie Lambie, basically saying 20 years from now they're going to be walking down the street and union workers are going to come up and harass them. And Rex Patrick,
we're going to say that's completely out of character for him.
Yeah, and he probably will do that if he sees them. Yeah. Rex Patrick is one of the Centre Alliance senators who they used to be the Nick Xenophon team, but now Nick Xenophon's gone, so they're now the Centre Alliance. And he has basically gone to the Australian Federal Police to ask if he should be worried about that. And he's also taking it to the Senate Privileges Committee, which apparently has the power to jail people, which is kind of weird. I didn't know that. But I think it's very unlikely that they will jail him, but he might get some kind of reprimand. So anyway, watch this space. John Setka, you should resign. Jackie Lambie, don't vote for this shitty bill just because he's a dickhead.
Well put.
Thanks.
Now it's time for
Shitpost of the Week.
So this week, we're awarding Shitpost of the Week to Seamus Byrne, who's a moderator and our special correspondent for South Australia. But it's been a little quiet in South Australia. This meme's actually about New South Wales. So in our last episode, we mentioned that some conservative Liberal MPs are threatening to vote down Gladys Berejiklian, the Premier of New South Wales.
Lipspill. Hashtag Lipspill.
Hashtag Lipspill.
Twitter was going wild.
Yeah, yeah. Well, there was actually two unrelated hashtag Lipspills, the first of which was just make-believe, and the second one was this one. And
a lot of people in the wake of Gladys Liu last week as well, tweeting out bad week to be a Gladys in the Liberal Party.
That's true.
Which I thought about tweeting and didn't tweet, and now I'm really glad that I didn't tweet it.
Well, you could have got in ahead of them. But anyway.
Actually, I would have. But anyway. Yeah.
You would have got all those teardrop followers or what, you know. Anyway.
Yeah, get those sweet 3 likes. Next time.
This meme is an image of Tanya Davies, who's one of the MPs that was threatening this bill. And it says...
Spearheading it, really.
True. And it says, what if we moved a spill motion against the Premier? Just kidding. Unless...
The answer, of course, at the end being... No, I'm a coward.
Right.
And I don't even have the conviction of my extremely shitty beliefs.
That's how the story ended, is that they realized that their, like, quote-unquote insurgency would go nowhere. So they were like, I guess we will just not.
Which I am really proud to announce that this is the first time on the podcast in my history as a political commentator that I have made a prediction that came true. And I said,
congratulations.
I said last week that, I doubted that she would move to the crossbench as she promised.
You'll and be hired by Fairfax she instead, next week.
I mean, yeah, like they're behind the eight ball and also, fuck, they couldn't afford me.
I also just wanted to
work,
shout
Seamus.
Out Seamus Byrne, the caption that he put with the meme is, please excuse the poor quality of this meme. I busted whichever hand it is I meme with, which is a deep cut Simpsons reference that I appreciate deeply. And of course, we love low quality memes. So, no sweat
there,
Seamus.
Oh, yeah, it's extremely low effort, which, yeah. So
makes it all easier to describe.
Yeah, big tick in the plus column. Okay, so moving on, we wanted to talk about the cashless welfare card a little bit more. We talked about it last week in a very kind of general way and some of the politics behind it. But one thing that we didn't really touch on, which I just wanted to kind of go into a little bit more detail about this week, is the way in which it specifically punishes Indigenous people. Any new government measure that more tightly controls welfare or the way it's distributed is necessarily going to hit Indigenous people first and hardest. There was an article in The Guardian this week by Lorena Allam about this. And the subheading of the article is that the government accused of demonizing vulnerable people after only 100 of the more than 5,000 people on the cashless welfare program have been allowed to leave. So that's also not something that we discussed last week, how difficult it is to actually get off this card. So there's an interview in this article with an Indigenous woman named Raylene Peel, who talks about the shame and humiliation that she felt having to use this card, and to the extent that she refused to use it even when she couldn't work because she was caring for her dying father. The absolute kind of stigma and shame of it, but also the indignity of having your agency taken away by the government. And specifically in her case, in the case of many Indigenous people, it being another in a long line of horrible interventions by the government to remove Indigenous people's agency. As a quote from Peel here, she says, "It's bringing up the olden days of rations and the welfare, taking our kids and telling us how to live." So I think that really situates the cashless welfare card in kind of a long history of colonial intervention in Indigenous people's lives. So that's just a detail that we wanted to add to the story from last week. And Noon, there was one other really awful story in First Nations news this week that you wanted to touch on.
Yeah, so this week another Indigenous woman was murdered by police, and this was a Yamachi woman who we're calling Miss Clark, who was murdered in Geraldton. And there's not really heaps of the story that we have to say, except that I just wanted to mention this really disgusting quote from the police, who said, "During an incident at the address, an officer discharged their firearm, causing a woman to receive a gunshot wound."
Absolutely pathetic.
She's just,
yeah.
So fucking obscene and like trying to distance that. Is it like,
yeah, the absolute refusal to take responsibility for the hurt they do.
They
shot
and killed
her.
That's
all there is to
it. They just can't even say it. Yeah.
You know, this ties into what we were talking about last week as well with the coronial inquest into Tanya Day's death and the police refusing to apologize even symbolically, and do anything concrete in terms of addressing the way that they interact with Indigenous people, which, you know, repeatedly, time and time again, results in them dying. So there's not that much detail on that story out at the moment, but we will probably follow up on that next week. That's Geraldton in Western Australia, by the way, which I don't think we mentioned up top.
Yep. Next up.
You fucked up.
Okay, so this week the person that fucked up was ABC journalist Pat McGrath, who wrote an article called that was titled "Fraser-Anning Bankruptcy Hearing Starts Tomorrow, but Far-Right Former Senator is Believed to Not Be in Australia." And so, I mean, that really sums it up. Fraser-Anning is being sued for bankruptcy, and he has gone to the US. But the thing that fucked up...
He's gone to chill with them at the Snowflake drive-thru.
Which is the name of the diner that she owns, or used to own, maybe, which is hilarious.
Maybe she used to run it. Yeah, one of his daughters used to run it.
Snowflake Drive-In.
Amazing, amazing. Sorry, go on.
Okay, so, but the thing that was the fuck up was that originally the opening line of this article in bold was, "Fraser-Anning's short political career was built on a platform of patriotism and putting Australia first," which, God, doesn't that just make you want to salute?
oh, fuck, I hadn't even realized my arm had reflexively done it. My fingers are pressed hard against my forehead right now.
Oh, no. I mean one of the Nazi salutes.
Oh, yeah. Well, that's my I'm not even going to make that joke.
Yeah, cool.
I am not doing a Nazi salute.
Good to know. Yeah.
Not even in jest by myself.
Yeah, that is wise. And look, let's be honest. I mean, a regular salute is pretty fascist.
Pretty fashy to begin with.
But anyway, I mean, this is just like classic ABC pandering to the far right by describing his career as patriotism and putting Australia first. But apparently they received a reasonable amount of shit for it, because within an hour it had been updated to say, "Fraser-Anning's short political career was built on a platform of nationalism and rhetoric about Australian values," which I gotta say is much less objectionable, but also...
But like barely better...
At least it was accurate,
dude,
you know?
The dude literally said "final solution" in his maiden speech.
Yeah.
Like, how much more explicitly fucking racist do you need to be in public, on the record, like, on video, in front of the whole country before the ABC will say he
this
built
guy
his,
is a white supremacist.
He's built his career on white supremacy. It's so easy, ABC. And the other thing that happened this week... And this is slightly less egregious, but they need to be fucking on top of this as well. On Q&A, you know, they throw up the tweets at the bottom of the screen when people tag the show to get their tweets on. And they put up a tweet, which is a variation on the 14 words phrase, which is a white supremacist, or specifically Nazi dog
slogan,
whistle.
Yeah.
Which you can look up the history of it. I don't think that we really need to go into it here. But basically, you know, if... You are working for a program that is putting out tweets to be consumed by a huge audience on the national fucking broadcaster. You need to be aware of what white supremacist talking points are and what the jokes are that they're using. And shouts to Tom Tanaki, who I think we can reasonably call a friend of the show
at
this stage, for pointing that out on Facebook.
He's actually been in touch with the people who do the tweeting at Q&A and has sort of briefed them on that. And so if anyone has any info about Twitter bots that are likely to be trying to get up on Q&A, you can send it through to Tom Tanaki on Facebook and he will pass it on to the ABC.
Cool. Well, for mains, we're going to bring you something a little bit different this week. This is an interview kind of a bit more along the arts and culture lines, I guess, than what we normally do. So hope you enjoy. Okay, cool. We're here with Charlie, who is the artistic director of the Dead End Film Festival, which is happening in November here in Melbourne. Charlie, do you want to tell us a little bit about the film festival?
This is the third year we're doing DEF this year. It's at the Coburg Drive-In. It's a short film festival. We have a focus on both local and international films that reflect this idea of resourceful cinema. Resourceful cinema is basically filmmakers who utilize resources that are immediately available to them, cast and crew, equipment. They don't over-edit too much. They kind of rely on action in public places as opposed to in studios. Tends to be narrative-focused or a kind of docu-narrative hybrid. Yeah, that's the film program. And then alongside that, we have live performances around the car park at the drive-in. We commission alternative seating from local artists.
Yeah, it's a really fun festival. I went last year, and I just love the concept of, promoting this kind of more accessible, less super expensive kind of filmmaking. I feel like filmmaking can be, and cinema in general can be, these really like, it takes so much money, people think, to get off the ground. But actually, you know, if you've got an idea and a few friends and a camera phone, like, you can get going. So, yeah, it's really cool that you're like supporting that kind of work. And as part of the festival, you're doing some like satellite events or like in the lead up to it. And the one that we wanted to talk about today, which kind of makes it extra relevant to the Snack Pod, is that you're filming a documentary called Rats in the Ranks, which is a political documentary about the mayoral race for the Council of Leichhardt in inner Western Sydney in 1994. Noon and I watched this film earlier in the week, and I mean, we loved it. It's fantastic.
It was pretty incredible. It was also deeply stressful and like uncomfortable. It was a lot of fun to watch, and it was sort of like Larry David-esque comedy, but like cringy, painful comedy. And especially because none of the people who were in it realized that it was a comedy.
Well, I love. Yeah, I mean, it's very funny watching it. Like. It's this real. It's such a kind of microcosmic kind of political drama. It's so small because it's about basically there's 12 people on the council, and each of them has one vote to cast for who's going to become mayor. So it's on a really small scale.
It's not like they're campaigning in the electorate or like trying to get support from the like people or anything like that. They're just like arguing and trying to manipulate the 11 other people who have been elected to council.
Yeah, it's like super contained, and because it's like it's Australians, they're all like super low affect and just really like deadpan the whole time, and everybody's smoking, and the fucking haircuts and outfits are amazing because it's the mid-90s.
It's very early 90s. There's like huge chunky glasses and yeah, like people lighting up cigarettes in the middle of like the council offices and shit.
Yeah. It kind of centers on this central figure of Larry Hand, who was the incumbent mayor at the time, and I think he'd served three terms or something. He was an ex-Labor guy, got kicked out of the Labor Party, and was running as an independent. And essentially, the film is focused around him trying to split the four Labor councillors down the middle so that he can get a couple of their votes, because if they vote as a united bloc, then he can't get up. So it's focuses around just like the phone calls and the like backroom deals, and the like many coffees at Bar Italia on Norton Street, which was a real throwback for Noon and I because we grew up around there,
yeah,
and we went
to
school. Like, yeah, Bar Italia was definitely a spot for us when we were like 14. So one thing I really like about this movie is kind of how low key it is. I think it very much fits the death ethos in that way, in the sense of it's not these kinds of really high-pitched political documentaries that you see a lot of these days, like The Killing Fields, for example, came out a couple of years ago, which is about like the Gillard and Rudd. And it's always pitches life and death stuff. It's so melodramatic. It's all fucking Shakespearean. And then Rats in the Ranks is very much people just like sitting around in these dinky offices, like chain-smoking. And whenever like Larry Hand gets a bit of bad news, like someone's not voting for him, he's just like, well, rooted now.
It was also clearly made in an era before the smartphone and social media and so on. Like, it's really incredible to see how much behind the scenes access Larry Hand gives, especially considering that, like, as we discover in the film, he's a real political player, even though, as Zach says, it's quite sort of low key. He really is like doing the numbers and he's figuring all this shit out. And he's like, I need her to betray them and, you know, like all this shit. But he's just like telling all of these dirty fucking secrets to the camera crew and just like not even worrying about it.
You definitely couldn't do it these days.
No, I think, everyone's a lot more tight-lipped, or at least a media trained And I think at that time it was, I imagine the kind of spirit that the film was made in was just to collate as much footage as they could, just to always be there.
Mm.
And I think, you know, it's hours and hours and hours and hours of footage that is then created, a narrative is built from, to make the final film. And I think from that, and it's made up largely of all those moments where maybe a lot of the counselors kind of thought were inconsequential, or they're just sort of like, you know, they're not the things that they maybe thought the documentarians were going to focus on in terms of doing it. But I think that's what they did so well, is make this kind of masterful characterization of each of the counselors and then bring it together in a full narrative form.
The way it all comes together in the final scene where the vote happens and they've got the 12 counselors in the chamber, and, you know, like the way that everybody's played off against each other, they've like deliberately been avoiding each other so that they don't have to admit that they've betrayed one another, and like that, like no one in the room actually knows how the final vote is going to go. And the amount of drama that they create, like, in the edit is amazing, especially considering, as you say, how kind of like it's pieced together from these extremely like everyday moments. Just going back to the idea of like people these days being kind of more media trained or like tight-lipped in front of cameras, I mean, I'm sure this definitely had an effect. I mean, like, if I was an Australian politician watching this in the mid-90s, I'd be like, fuck that, I am never talking to a documentary crew. But Anthony Albanese, who's like a key player in New South Wales Labor at that time, as he is now, is kind of featured in the doco, but like off screen.
He's this shadowy guy in the background pulling strings, because he actually refused to be filmed, I think.
Yeah, and it like goes to show like that's an actual savvy political operator right there. He's not in the movie, and he could just tell, I'm sure, that it was going to be a farce. But what I love it that they call him in, because the Labor faction can't decide which one of them they're going to put up as a candidate as mayor. So they call him in, they have a meeting, it all happens off screen, and he just suggested that they pull a name out of a hat. And that's what they end up fucking doing. Like, yeah, just...
The fact that everyone agrees to it as well it blows my mind, because I don't know how anyone at that point is raising their hand saying, I'm not quite sure that this is the process we need to follow, and then everyone throws their hands up and said, we're not going to agree any other way, so...
Yeah, amazing. And I think it goes back to one of the things that I think is really notable about the movie is it's completely devoid of like any ideological or moral motivation for anybody in the movie. Like, it's purely political the whole time. Everything that they do, it's not about, you know, this is what I want to achieve when I'm in office. It's just about gaining and grasping power. And the fact that like the boss of your party is going to come in and be like, okay, you've got a dispute, sort it out in this completely like mathematical, arbitrary, random way, instead of actually trying to sort out like who's got the better or stronger ideological position.
Yeah.
Pretty amazing.
So Charlie, you mentioned earlier that Def is going to have some performances and so on going around the films. What are the performances and so on that's happening around Rats in the Ranks after the Rats in the Ranks screening?
So we have, first of all, it's ended up, because we're screening the film inside the council chambers at the Brunswick Town Hall. So that was largely kind of what inspired us to frame a screening and a kind of performance program that was grounded in some kind of local politics. It's now defunct, the council chambers, but it's still, you know, it feels very much like the council chambers you see in Leichhardt.
I reckon that'll be an awesome space to watch that film in. It'll feel very real.
Absolutely. I hope it still smells like cigarette smoke.
Yeah.
The 90s. Haven't changed the carpet, I bet.
Not much has changed in there.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Look, it sounds like it's going to be a lot of fun. In terms of these performances that are going around the film, I know that like one of Def's kind of central... ideals, or I'm not sure how to describe it, but like you definitely make an effort to be inclusive and diverse and have a wide variety of voices represented, and also, you know, strive to make your events like accessible as possible. And, you know, I know at the festival last year that all the movies had captions, and it's such an easy and simple thing to do, for people who, you know, so that every people who can't hear can enjoy the movies, but not everybody does that.
Mm.
I know that one of the performances that you've scheduled around Rats in the Ranks is kind of a reaction, I guess, to partially to how kind of like white the movie is, because everybody in it is white. Let's make that clear.
Yeah,
local politics in Western Sydney in the mid-90s is not a shock, but yeah. Do you want to talk a little bit about that?
Yeah, so we have a few of the performances. Basically, I'll kind of walk you through the program. We kind of arrive in the foyer at the town hall, and then we go to we follow a marching drummer up to just outside the council chambers, where there is the Moreland City Band playing brass fanfare. We're going to drink free champagne and eat egg and salad sandwiches. And then we sort of enter into the kind of political realm of the council chambers themselves, for which we have Magic Stephen performing.
Cool, he's great.
Who performed, has always performed with us at the festival.
Mm. He's a spoken word artist.
Spoken word artists, kind of comic therapy.
And does amazing comics on Facebook as well, if you want to look him up.
Yeah, amazing illustrator in his own right also. Mm. So he's going to do a reading of his in response to the film that will be much in the same vein of his work, that is kind of a personal response to place and people. And following that, we have Joe Pugh, who is a person of colour in Melbourne, and they're a writer who has also written a lot for Deaf in past programs. And their response is largely framed around, like Zach's talking about, the overwhelmingly bright whiteness that is inside the council chambers and their surrounds in Leichhardt in 94.
Yeah, I think the only people who aren't white that are in the film are some Chinese school children who are there on like tour or whatever. And it's funny because they're being used as a prop in the film. Like they're being used as a background for a photo shoot for the councillors. And I think that is extremely representative of the relationship that the council had to race and whiteness at that time.
Yeah, for sure. So always, you know, great to see like events screening these kinds of movies and taking from them kind of what is interesting and relevant, but also being deliberately, I guess, kind of critical and bringing that lens to it as well. So very cool. So this screening of Rats in the Ranks is happening on the 27th of September, which is next Friday. We'll be releasing this on the Sunday before it happens. And the Dead End Film Festival itself proper, which is the big program of shorts at the Coburg drive-thru, that's happening end of November.
Friday 29th November, yeah.
Excellent. So where can people find you online?
Well, we have a website that is www.deff.tv.
D-E-F-F?
D-E-F-F, yeah. The same as our Instagram handle is D-E-F-F.tv. The rest, I think now, because we've been going 3 years, you can Google search in it. It doesn't send you to random variations of
that's a good film fest.
Yeah,
I remember.
The SEOs are finally in our favor.
We can only hope that happens to our show at some point.
We're getting there. Like we do now show up on Google Podcasts, which is like which you only show up on Google Podcasts if Google believes as a search engine that you exist. Which like took us a while to get there, but we are getting
sort of unsurprisingly. There's not that many results for Snack Pod, but several of them are like lunch items that you can buy, little snack pods. So hopefully we'll beat them soon.
Yeah, and those are not results that we have an issue being
no, that's
put
right.
next to. Like, you know, we did name our podcast after our love of snack. but thank you so much for coming on the show. It's been really nice to chat about this. I'm really glad that you've brought this movie kind of onto our radar, because it's a pretty singular piece of like Australian political history, I think. And I'd recommend everybody go out and try to watch it. If you can't make it to the festival, to the screening itself in Melbourne. I'm not sure how else you can get your hands on it, but
you can send me an email.
Yep, email Charlie. Get on deaf.tv. Email Charlie, and The other way you could see a little snippet of it is on the SBS online, like on demand or whatever, you can see Margaret and David's old review of it from when it came out.
Yeah, both gave it 5 stars.
Yeah, going into bat for Australian film unfailingly every time. Yeah, but they loved it.
and they give a great diss at the AFI in that. Yeah.
Because like, it didn't make the shortlist for best doco at the Australian Film Industry Awards this year, and they're both like, this is so indicative of what a fucking joke this entire organization is.
It's amazing. It's amazing.
It's good shit. So check that out too. Cool. Thanks, Charlie.
Thank you, Charlie.
We'll leave it there.
Thanks for having me.
Our pleasure. Cool. I hope you enjoyed that little interview with Charlie from Dead End Film Festival. Definitely get along to see Rats in the Ranks if you can.
It was really a great film.
It's genuinely good. We don't endorse stuff that we don't like.
It's true.
And on that note, we have a potluck from a listener. This is our segment where we play a little bit of audio submitted by a snack pod listener. Do we have a name for snack pod listeners yet?
No, we should. Snackers.
Snack podders?
Snackers? We'll work on it. If you have an idea about what the fan base should be called, get in touch with us. Possibly in the form of a potluck, which you can do. Just record it yourself talking on your phone or whatever and email it to us at ospolsnackpod@gmail.com.
Ideally, make it a minute or less if you can. We've got one this week from an anonymous listener, which we're going to play now.
Potluck, where you bring the snacks.
Got a bit of beef with the term echo chamber. And to be honest, I'm not entirely sure people mean the same thing when they discuss it. Personally, I don't think an echo chamber is a bad thing. If people are actually educated and knowledgeable about the thing that they are echoing anyway. Like, some things just need to be echoed. Like, trans rights are human rights. Don't put kids in cages. Refoulement is bad. Don't murder children. Don't cut down the sacred birthing trees at Jack Warren. Like, these things, like, they need to be echoed. They should be echoed. It's just plain and simple. Like, and I don't think these echo chambers need to be broken through. I don't need to hear the other side of the argument where, like, transphobia is good. Please fuck off and die. Like, I don't care. If you use your voice to reduce another person's inherent right to be safe, then you don't get that voice. Like, fuck off with your preaching to the converted rhetoric. It's not a bad thing to stand up for human rights and have them validated and have them repeated. There will always be, especially in Australia, there will always be people on the fringes who aren't the converted, who are questioning, who need that education. They need that knowledge. And, like, knowledge is power. We know this. So this whole echo chamber thing, it's just bullshit. It's an alt-right tactic to undermine the left. It's not a genuine thing that we really need to consider in the middle of an argument. On top of that, I'm sick of going to panels. I'm sick of going to panels on feminism and having to listen to TERFs and SWERFs bang on about their bullshit because we need to have a balanced argument. Like, just fuck off.
Thank you so much for sending that in. And yeah, we totally agree about the echo chamber discourse.
Yeah, you 100% don't need to both sides everything. There are certain things that definitely shouldn't be both sided. And I guess I hadn't considered it before, like the way that the right does weaponize the idea of echo chambers against the left, but it's a good point.
And if you've ever been on like Stormfront or any other Nazi shit, they have their own echo chambers.
They fucking love echo chambers. Yet again,
when it's their shit,
the right
being
is
echoed.
Disingenuous. Yeah.
Surprise. 100%.
Also, we just wanted to point out that we have been getting a little bit of feedback lately. It would be nice for us to have some people who are not dudes on the show and maybe actively center feminist issues a little bit more. And we totally agree with that, and we think that's a great idea, and we promise that we're working on it.
Definitely an issue we're aware of about the show. Yeah.
100%. And we know that we just...
interviewed a man.
Like interviewed
right
a man.
Yeah.
On this episode. But there's more good stuff in that area coming. And in the meantime, we'd like to thank our anonymous listener for submitting some of that good feminist content that we know that people want so much. Great. Well, I think that pretty much wraps it up. please sign up to our Patreon. $1 a month gets you a monthly bonus episode with extra shit talking from both Noon and I, if you're into that sort of thing. But if you can't support us on Patreon or you don't want to, for which there are many good reasons, an awesome way that you can support the show is to give us a review on iTunes. We really love them. Make us feel nice.
And it might mean that we get bumped ahead of the Young IPA podcast on iTunes. And although they don't know it yet, they are our nemeses. So
they will
hear it soon.
They will know our fucking names. I pledge it here and now. But in the meantime, here are a couple of nice reviews we got on YouTube, on iTunes this week. This one is from MC Volva, and it is titled "Spoon Feed Me My News." 5 stars. Politics makes me really sad often, so it's nice to come here and have my hand held while I'm spoon-fed the hot news of the week. It's a filling and funny time, and Zach and Noon get worked up enough about the outrageous trash that is Ozpol that I'm able to relate. Thank you for cooking up this pod for us. Big fan. Smoke, smoke. Kiss, kiss.
Thanks, MC Volva.
Thanks, MC Volva.
This one's from Dillings101. Bite-sized, also 5 stars, pretty tasty snacks. Bite-sized pieces of detestable content, which I'm hoping he meant delectable, but either way, bite-sized pieces
we'll
of detestable
it.
Content from two funny people who have obviously read a lot of articles. A nice palate cleanser to the full diet of neoliberals' junk. Neoliberals'
junk. Thank you,
Dillings. Yeah.
Yeah. Ooh, yeah. Sending out detestable vibes. Thank you very much
Thank
for,
you.
For your kind words. Yeah, so reviews really help us, and subs really help us, and sharing the podcast with your buds also really helps us. Did you have something you wanted to say, Noon?
No.
Well, in that case, keep on snacking in the free world.
Crunch, crunch.